Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Sam Fisher grew up on a farm outside of Sydney, later moving to the city with his parents. He joined a jazz band at his high school and won a scholarship at the prestigious Berklee College of Music in Boston when he was 18. When he finally landed a record deal with a new label under Columbia Records in 2017, it was short-lived. He was dropped after 10 months having released no music. In 2018, as a last-ditch effort at being an artist, he self-released his EP Not a Hobby, which included a track called The City. Early in 2019, The City became the biggest song on a new app called TikTok. Within months, Lewis Capaldi had been in touch asking him to support him on the US leg of his tour. After the final night of the tour, The City had accumulated over a billion streams on Spotify. He collaborated with Keith Urban on his song Polaroid, and shortly thereafter he was signed to RCA Records in the UK. Sam went on to perform on Jimmy Kimmel Live, The Late Late Show with James Corden, and The Ellen Show. He has since recorded a single with Demi Lovato, What Other People Say, which was released in 2021. Sam has collaborated with the likes of Anne-Marie, Kane Brown, as well as writing and appearing on Sam Felt's 2020 dance track, Pick Me Up. Other collaborators include Amy Shark on High On You and Meghan Trainor with All Right. Sam's debut album, I Love You, Please Don't Hate Me, was released in the beginning of 2024. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Sam Fisher. Where do we find you in the world and how are you doing?
Mate, thank you so much for having me here. Where do you find me in the world? I'm in London. I don't even know what day it is. It's Wednesday morning. Yeah. It's raining. I'm doing well. Everything's good. I've been in London for 3 days, so jet lag is kicking my ass, but it's nice to be here.
You were in the States, eh?
I was in the States. I came from the States, yeah. But okay. I am moving my whole life over to the UK kind of from now on.
Oh, okay. So were you based in the States previously?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, okay. I've been in the States for the last 14 years.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I was in Boston for 4 years, LA for 10 years.
Yep.
And I think it's just time for a new adventure. Given everything that's happened over the last 5 years, it just feels right to be here now.
Okay. So that's what's motivating it. Just the feeling and just for newness.
You know, I'm someone who I love change.
Okay.
And I think being still it doesn't really work for me. And I think also just given the last 5 years of everything that's happened, having this huge moment of this city be crushed by a pandemic, I think the States, as amazing as it has been for me with all the opportunity it's given me, I think it also represents a lot of heartache and a lot of heartbreak. So I'm ready for a new chapter and like starting a new story here. And
yes.
I also just love the scene here, you know, the writing scene, the art scene, it's just great here. So I'm excited about the move.
Brilliant. So now let's rewind. At what age did you decide or feel, whether it was a child or as a teenager, did you think, cool, this is my path to be in this world, this entertainment world, this music world, this creation world? And how did that journey accumulate to where we are today? So Sam's journey in the music world.
You know, it's interesting. As far as the music industry goes, I was kind of late to it.
Okay.
But I, as far as music goes, it was always a part of my life. I started violin when I was 3. I started saxophone when I was 10. And I didn't sing for anyone until I was like 13. And then I started writing songs when I was like 12, but I didn't show anyone those songs until I was like 20. And then I think it was when I was like 20 and I was in college and I played a song live for the first time and it got a really warm reception. I was like, oh, okay, people like this. Let me just like keep doing this. And then, that's really, you know, there's a big story in it, but, and it's a long kind of winding journey. But really, when I realized that maybe I had a future in pop music, in the music industry, was when I got that kind of validation that that what I was doing with my original music was worthy almost. I know that's kind of, I don't know, that's not really like the romantic story that a lot of artists have, where it's like it was this or nothing. But I knew I could sing, and I had a lot of people that were doubting me in Australia. And so a big part of it was like me wanting to prove a lot of people wrong. They just didn't know that I had no idea how I was going to do that until I was like 20. But yeah, so that's really it. It's like a journey of validation and vindication. So the two V's of my career, and we're here now. So things
Okay, so a
worked
couple
out.
of points I'd like to unpack. Are you still playing violin and saxophone, first of all?
I like to say I am, but no.
Oh, okay. Sean succinct answer.
I'm sure I could. I have my violin with me, but no.
So when you said that you received validation that it was good enough, did you feel pre to receiving that there was that it wasn't good enough, or were you doubting yourself?
I knew that my voice was good enough. I knew that. I was definitely doubting myself when it came to my songs, because I was a songwriting major at college, whatever that means. And a lot of my professors just wouldn't really give me that reinforcement that I seeked about my writing. And so teachers, I think, can play such a pivotal role in your development as a human. And I wasn't really receiving that encouragement from them. Which is fine, and like, I didn't have an ego about it. I just like desperately wanted, I just desperately seeked that, or sought that out. And so there was a class that I took in college that really changed my life, and it was with Kara DioGuardi, who's one of the best songwriters of all time. And the first class, I presented a song, and she said to me, "I bet you get away with writing shit songs because you can sing them really well." And that changed my whole life, because I was like, oh my God, like, she's right. Like, I can sing my horrible songs really well. So that made me focus on concept and lyric and melody and structure and just the elements of the song that I was maybe not spending as much time on, because I was able to just sing whatever well. And kind of once I had that advice, I really started to like open up and write songs that I was proud of, and I ended up getting my first cut with a song in a movie my senior year of college, and that was, I made money, and I was like, cool, I'm off to LA. See ya.
Being in LA. Is it that feeling of what I perceive? And you tell me if having experienced yourself, if I'm correct in my understanding as an observer, is it this feeling of the Hollywood lights, the glamour, the glitz, the sort of Hollywood dream going there? And then obviously reality sets in and it's not necessarily that.
That's absolutely what it is. It's so interesting the way that LA is portrayed in movies and stuff, because like Hollywood, I think Hollywood is my least favorite part of LA. Like, it's disgusting. Like, it's so dirty, it's crowded, it's like, it's so not glitz and glam at all. When I went to LA, it was kind of like a all of a sudden I'm going to LA thing, because I'd been flying out to LA to write with this producer, and the songs that we were writing got heard by a label. And then that label, it was one of those classic stories where it was like 2 in the morning in Boston. I was drunk from a night out, and I get a phone call from an LA number, and I pick up, and they're like, "Where are you?" And I was like, "I'm in Boston." And they're like, "What are you doing there?" And I said, "I don't know." And they were like, "You need to be in LA right now. We need to make a record." And I was like, oh my God. Okay. So I like packed up my shit, booked a flight, and 3 weeks later I was in LA. And 24 hours after getting to LA, they said to me, "Just kidding, like, we're not gonna move forward with this." And so I had this like moment where I'm sitting in my friend's Toyota Prius in Beverly Hills outside the Live Nation building, And my whole, like, everything's like, what the? I have no money. I'm in LA. I have nowhere to be. And so I had paid rent for this place for 1 month. So I stayed there for like the month and then packed up my stuff and I slept on couches and on floors and wherever I could for like the next 6 months until I got a backgrounds gig. But yeah, so LA was not at all welcoming in any way, shape, or form. And it probably took me like 2 years before I really started to work. And yeah, it's weird that I was there for 10 years.
So then, I mean, it's interesting. I've moved from Johannesburg to other countries. I've lived in London, I've lived in Israel, and there's a perception that they're all waiting there to welcome you, and you're just going to fit in, and everything's going to be marvelous. But they're like, who are you? We don't care. We carry on with our lives. It doesn't matter you're here or not. So I think it's in every person's perception that they arriving, with this emotion that I'm like chest out and doing all of this stuff. But that no one cares, actually.
No one cares. No one cares. I mean, it's interesting. Like LA is definitely a city that is all about like the hot new thing. And so being new in LA is exciting if you can get into those doors. Like breaking into those doors, breaking them down it takes forever. But I don't know. I hustled really, really, really hard. I worked my ass off. I said yes to everything. I would be up all hours of the night trying to write, trying to network, going to clubs, going to shows, meeting whoever I could. They said they were in the music industry. And as soon as they did, I'd get their contact and set up a meal. We'd go and eat and they would put it on the company card. And that's how I afforded to eat for a long time.
Oh,
And
shut up.
it's kind of a classic story. It's kind of like, just like almost like a rite of passage, but yeah,
So those
that was it
days
in
or those
London.
moments during those 2 years or that period when you're sleeping on the floor, sleeping on the couch, just saying yes to everything, there were obviously moments that were like, oh, frustration. Why am I doing this? This type of feeling. What kept you going?
Delusion. Just total delusion. There were moments when I was frustrated and like I was broke as hell for a long time, but I didn't know. There wasn't a moment where I wanted to quit. There just wasn't. Like
Okay.
I think the first moment where I wanted to quit was after I signed my first record deal, and I was in a situation where I was being abused a lot by the person I was signed to, and it was just like horrible. And that was when I was like, oh, I got what I wanted and it's horrible.
Yes.
That's the most devastating part. The hustle, the grind of it all, I loved it because I was making it happen for myself. And I
Oh,
was
okay.
so I think I don't know, there wasn't there was all I knew that something would work out because I believed in myself and like, the insecurity that I had in college of not playing my music for anyone was gone. Like I knew what I was doing was good. I just needed, I don't know, I needed those stars to align. I needed someone to hear one of my songs and kind of say, yeah, that's really good. It's just the problem is that the person who did that was just the wrong person to do that. And it wasn't until after I got dropped did this city start blowing up. So
So
I don't
maybe
know.
you needed, and I'm not surely aware of the whole situation, but whatever. Not whatever. I mean, it was experience for you, but maybe you needed to go through that negative of having that record label and it not being what it was supposed to be to know what you do want and what you will not allow and what boundaries to set in the future.
Yeah, ain't that the way with any breakup you ever go through, any negative experience you go
Yeah.
through, it's always a learning lesson. And though like it was really hard at the time, I wouldn't change it. And it allowed me to be a young new artist with a record deal with no songs out. And the rooms that I was able to get into, the writers, the producers that I was able to be introduced to was just like something that I would never have been able to do without it. So there was a lot of positives from that experience. It was just what was going on behind the scenes was just not okay.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, no, I my journey has definitely been a convoluted and strange one, but there are some things I would change, but not much, not
Yeah.
much.
I suppose when you're going through it, those challenges, you, some of them you'd be like, oh, I wish I could change this. But now then you look back and it was like, actually, it helped me achieve this or realize this. So actually, I wouldn't have changed it at the end. So I get what you're saying. So you released your latest or your new album in January. I want to unpack, first of all, your creative brain from 0 to 3 to 4 minutes in creating a song. Is it easy every time? What motivates it? What invigorates it?
Is it easy every time? No. It changes, you know. There are some songwriters who are just so brilliant that like it all just like falls out of them. Like I feel like Julia Michaels is one. Sasha
Yes.
Sloan is incredible, and I wrote my song Fire on You with Sasha, and she's the same, and I'm really jealous of them. Like, how good would it be to just like have songs can piss out of you?
Yeah.
But no, it's different every time. Sometimes songs happen immediately. I have a song on the album called Landslide, and that was I was hammered, and it was like 1 in the morning, and me and the writers were just like trying to write this like party anthem, and we stopped halfway through, and oh, after like an hour of trying to write it, and we're like, this sucks, let's pivot, let's do something else. And like then this song Landslide, which is this beautiful acoustic love song, just like fell out of us. Sometimes I'll go into the studio with a concept, knowing exactly what I want to say. Sometimes I'll just have a line of lyric. Sometimes I'll just have a reference point as far as what kind of song I want to write. It really just depends on the day, and it depends on the vibe, and it depends on who I'm working with. And if it's, you know, if I'm working with people that I've worked with for years, like it's easy, it
Yeah.
feels easy. It changes, but it always starts with concept, and then kind of like a sonic world, like a vibe, if you will,
Yes.
that comes from whoever's on the piano or guitar, or the producer on a beat or whatever. So yeah, it's different every time. I don't have like a tried and true method, though I really wish I did. It would make life easier.
Exactly. So now, when you're collaborating with someone new or new energies in the room, you mentioned you've worked with some people for a period of time. So when there's someone new that you've never worked with or collaborated with before, when you walk into the room and space, obviously it's unveiling the vulnerability of releasing those feelings on pen to paper. So does it take you a moment for you to get used to that new energy or people or persons in the room, or do you just go in there and say, okay, let's do this?
It kind of depends. I mean, like, you know, every session starts with a hang. Like, we will talk for an hour, 2 hours sometimes. We'll talk about everything that's going on with us personally, maybe something that's going on in pop culture, in the news. Like, we'll just talk about everything. And I think it's very like it's pretty quick to see if like we just mesh as people. And then a song will build from maybe someone says something in the room, and you like go, oh, that's just like chase that for a sec and see if we can build a song off of what you just said. But yeah, I think you can tell pretty quickly if you guys are going to get along. You know, a songwriting session is like a therapy session. You have to allow yourself to be open,
Yes.
and say things to these people, these random people who you may have never met,
Yeah.
your deepest, darkest, you know?
Yes.
So, it's really weird. Like, songwriting is so freaking weird. But yeah, I think you can normally tell if it's going to be a good day or not. And then I think with a song, you can always tell if it's, I don't know if you can ever tell if it's a hit, but you can always tell if it's a good
Yeah,
song or not.
absolutely. And now then, when you're writing a song for another artist compared to writing for yourself, obviously it's the intention and the energy is still vulnerability and openness. But what is the difference?
Oh my God, it's so much easier.
Oh, really?
It's yeah, 'cause you get to kind of listen to them. You get to explore their story. You get to like watch them light up when you find something to talk about in the song that they hadn't thought of before, and you get
Okay.
to kind of live in their world. And like, you know, as an artist, getting to work with other artists, we all have artists have perspective, and it's nice to like. It's nice to play off of someone else's direction. And I also just love being able to like, I don't know, be the person in the room who isn't singing. And so getting to like vocal produce a bit and getting to
Yeah.
create cool counter melodies and harmonies and backgrounds and stuff. It's just, I like it. And it's also, someone else's story. I don't have to be the one to come up with what I'm going through. So
Yeah.
it's just like, it's a
So,
break. It's
understand.
cool. I love it.
So what's next? So you released the new album a few weeks ago, in fact, last month, like 4 or 5 weeks ago. So what's next on the horizon?
What's next? One of my favorite songs that I've ever written with Guy Sebastian, who is like hometown hero for me, Australia's golden boy. We are putting out a collaboration called Antidote,
Oh, lovely.
which is really, really exciting. I'm featured on it. It's his second single from his album. So that's coming out on Friday, and then my tour is in May in Australia and Europe, and then in June in the US. And so I've got shows coming up. And really, it's just promoting my album, I Love You, Please Don't Hate Me. And that album took me way too long to release. And so I'm excited to be on tour with it and performing those songs and getting to experience them live and getting to like see what that feels like. So I'm
Haven't
super
you performed live? Obviously, you've performed live before, surely.
Of course.
Yes.
It's more, there are some songs on the album that I haven't performed yet.
Oh, I understand. Understand.
And getting to kind of put the album into a live show is going to be a sick experience.
Okay, so what do you enjoy about performing live?
Honestly, man, like it's the one thing that I haven't been able to do as much because the pandemic kind of stole that from me.
Okay.
But for me, it's like where I shine. Like that is my strength. It's my bread and butter performing. The fans' reaction. I like, who doesn't love people cheering for them? Every aspect about performing live is so sick. Like whether it's festivals because you get festival catering, love
Yes.
that. getting to travel, getting to see new places, getting to meet the fans. Like this is the whole thing. When this city took off, and even what other people say with Demi, like pandemic was happening. Like I wasn't
Yeah.
able to travel anywhere. Wasn't able to meet the fans. Wasn't able to tour. And so I haven't been able to really go around the world and thank the fans for putting me in the position that I'm in. So really it's just, I don't know, it's fun. It's really fun.
So I've got an interesting discussion around this, and I have had multiple answers for and against this question with a lot of artists. So I'm always that person right up in front. I'm jamming, I'm dancing, I'm doing my thing, I'm having a ball. I'll take my phone
Love.
out for maybe a couple of videos, a couple of shots, and I'll put it away. But I notice the people around me a lot of the time, maybe for 70 to 80% of the time, they're filming, tweeting, posting, etc., etc. Does that, for the person on the stage seeing that, bother you, or it's just where society is?
I think it's a bit of both. Like,
Okay.
it is just where society is. And, like, I'm not going to complain if a clip of my show goes viral,
Yes,
Like it'll
actually, yeah.
help. It'll help sell tickets. It'll push
Yeah.
the song. But yeah, like I wish my fans sometimes. I wish people in general would just live in the moment a little more. Like it's
Yeah.
of course, like get your phone out, your favorite song. Like get your flashlight out when it's a ballad. Do what you need to do with your phone. But like, I wish that there was more enjoying of the music. Like there are definitely people who've come to my shows and have just kind of stood there with their phones like this the whole
Yes, I
time.
know, that's so frustrating. I
And
see
like then
that.
I'll see my entire set on YouTube the next day, and it just I understand it, and I understand wanting to relive the show. But yeah, like a big part of me wishes that it was just get your phone out at some points, and for the rest, just have a good time.
Have a
I
good time.
really, yeah, just have a good fucking time.
So
And
you and
especially when it's like new songs, like when I'm playing new songs. It would be so nice to like be able to see their reaction instead of see them
yes,
filming.
exactly.
But whatever.
So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I love the aesthetic of holding something, the images, the thank yous. For me, it's an energy exchange with you guys for all the hard work that you put into creating stuff.
So good.
I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, vinyls, cassettes, even cassettes, can you believe, are on an upward trajectory again, gratefully. But we've also got the streaming platforms where people consume music on. What are your observations and perceptions of the landscape?
I think it's great that there is so much music that's so accessible. I think, yeah, the accessibility of music for people around the world to be able to hear it, that's great when it comes to streaming. But It's not great for songwriters' pockets. It's not great for
Yes.
artists' pockets. It's not great for making money. I think that streaming has really, really hurt songwriters especially, because, we don't get paid up front and we don't get points on the master. And I think it's great that vinyl is so popular that to hear CDs and cassettes are making a run back. I'm not sure where people are going to play them because I don't think CD players and cassette players are really made anymore, but
No.
it's
I interrupt there. So I went to get a new CD player last year because I hadn't had one for a while. I was living overseas, et cetera, et cetera. And everyone said, there's no way you're going to find one. There are none. And in South Africa, there's a sort of a delivery, sort of like Amazon, but more specific to South Africa called Takealot. And I went on thinking, hoping that there'd be one option. There were like hundreds of options for CD players, hundreds. I had to
Oh, that's
narrow it
so
down
good.
and narrow it down again. And then I got my goodie, and now it feels like I'm in a stadium compared to listening off
Oh, I
digital.
love
This
it.
digital is like so compressed.
That is so good to hear. I don't know, old music industry money was unreal. Like, all physical sales, incredible. Yeah, so I think that's where I'm at with it. Like, streaming is amazing because so many people can hear music, they have access to it, the fingertips. I know that I stream music all the time, but I don't know. When it comes to the business side of things, it would be so nice to be in the old music industry because, woo, we would all be making money. We would all be living good. I would have bought a couple houses with this city, but not to be, not to be.
We'll put it out there that will happen down the line when CDs are and everything's back to normal. And what's interesting, in fact, is that a lot of the fans or the people on the streets, inverted commas, if you want to call them that, I speak to a lot of people and they don't actually realize there's a huge educational bridge or gap that needs to be made because a lot of the people don't actually know that you guys actually don't make money off streams. They think you guys are killing it. They don't actually realize when you say, okay, you've had 100 million streams, you only made $500. So it's just, there's a huge education piece that needs to be made of that as well. So all the people listening, here's your education piece.
I'm also like, that's absolutely true. I think I'm also very fine with the perception that people think that I'm rich as hell. Like, sure, like go for it. I don't care, spread that rumor. But yeah, no, the reality is that a lot of artists who have had hits even are still not, they don't have house money, myself included, and so it is interesting. Yeah, streaming is amazing for some people. Real honestly, independent artists thriving off of streaming, and major labels are thriving off of streaming as well. So it's the artist, but there's so much opportunity that comes with having big numbers on streaming, and I'm not gonna shy away from saying how grateful I am for that. So,
At least
double-edged sword.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask this question in 2 minutes, 2 years, 20 hours, 20 years, I know your answer will be different every time simply because there are millions of them. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those songs be and by whom? If you can't think of specific songs, then maybe just five artists.
Oh my God. Okay, wait, I've got my phone here.
Okay.
Okay, first of all, it would be my own songs. Go listen to I Love You, Please Don't Hate Me. But Sasha Alex Sloan just put out a song called Highlights. It's like nothing I've ever heard before. It's just she's so perfect. Ed Sheeran's album, Autumn Variations,
Yes.
forever obsessed with it. Made For Me by Money Long has been on repeat. Oh my God, I can't think. Anything by SZA, obsessed. How many is that? Four? One
Yeah, one
more.
more, one more.
It's another SZA song, but it's a feature. It's called No Seasons, Gene Dawson and SZA.
Okay. Cool, nice mix.
Just obsessed with it.
Couple I need to add to mine. You've collaborated and written with a whole bunch of variety of different artists in different parts of the world. And as you mentioned, Demi Lovato, Megan Trainor, Guy Sebastian, etc. Three artists that you have yet to collaborate with that are on your bucket list.
On my bucket list, Ed Sheeran. Let's just go big.
Of course, why not?
Victoria Monet, and we've written together, but we haven't yet put anything out. But I would love to just get back in the studio with Noah Kahan. He's my boy. I love him. Yeah, sure. Those
There we
two.
go. There we go. So, Sam, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
I love you guys. I can't wait to get to see all of you on tour and go stream, go buy my new album, I Love You, Please Don't Hate Me, and Antidote with Guy Sebastian comes out on Friday, and I love you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.